For Politico, I'm Ryan Heath, and this is Global Insider. If it wasn't for COVID, 4,000 of the most influential and sometimes the richest people in the world would be gathered this week in the Swiss Alps town of Davos. From Sheryl Crow to Sheryl Sandberg, from Russian oligarchs to the World Food Programme. The A-list is there to network, to do deals, to learn and to get hammered. And in the middle of that programme, there is, without fail, this week's Global Insider, Richard Edelman, launching his annual Global Trust Barometer. He's so much of an insider that the A-list turns up for him at 7 a.m. to get the inside juice on his latest report. Well, that's not happening this year. Davos is delayed. But Richard Edelman and Global Insider are not deterred. We're bringing you the 22nd edition of the Trust Barometer, direct to your earphones. No $50,000 Davos ticket needed. You're welcome. But be warned, there's alarming news around a hardening class divide, deep questions about government competence, and new burdens for CEOs. Welcome to Global Insider, Richard. It's great to chat again. I'm just sorry we're not going to be doing it over hot chocolate or something stronger in Davos.
It had to be stronger, Ryan. Come on, man.
Well, at least you did not drag me out of bed at 7 a.m. like you usually do. So no. I'm grateful for that.
Yep.
Now, your Trust Barometer is an institution, not just in Davos, but globally. It's going 22 editions now. What struck me this year from the results is it feels different. It's not this sector is up and that sector is down. You're really laying it out there, saying there's a vicious cycle of distrust, and it feels like it's dragging everyone down in these results. Tell me about that.
Well, I really think you see a kind of failure of democracies at the moment. And it's because of this kind of death clench of government and media, where division and disinformation seem to be working in this evil cycle. And you see that rumors somehow are actually getting responded to by politicians who see the benefit of lighting up their base. And meanwhile, media is moving to the polarities. So it's beyond the thought bubbles into this different kind of place of intersectionality. And so what has to happen is media's got to get back to the business of authority, and government has to get to kind of longer term thinking as opposed to tactical victories every day.
One quote really stood out to me where you talk about distrust as society's default emotion. And I like that because it feels to me like the distrust is the seed of the anger that a lot of people are witnessing or experiencing. And you hit on this emotion point that we're kind of not acting rationally in a lots of ways. And humans never always acted rationally. But I feel like the emotion is such a big factor now in how we react to our institutions.
But Ryan, I think that the base of the emotion is fear. And our fears are exacerbated by the pandemic, which has not only given us health concerns, but also job concerns, because there were a lot of layoffs in the wake of March 2020. So the consequence of this is in every democracy, you see that under half of the people believe that they'll be better off in 5 years. So again, at the base is, I'm scared I'm going to be downwardly economically mobile. That is a different kind of world than the entire sort of post-war consensus. And it's seen also in the record mass class divide in attitudes towards institutions, where the elites think it's great and the mass is absolutely flatlined. So you have a 15-point delta. And in some countries, Thailand, 35 points, Saudi Arabia, Germany, 25 points. These were happy places before, Germany, for instance. And now this mass class thing has gone into that market as well.
Yeah, I really want to pick up on that as well, because Americans are often afraid to use that word. The whole culture and identity of America is built on this huge and growing middle class, and that there aren't these historic class divides that you saw between aristocracies and working classes in Europe. And the results of your barometer seem to indicate that we are hardening into new class divides. And maybe it's not purely about income inequalities now, but that gap appears to just be sort of hardening and becoming bigger. It's not going away.
Well, what we need now is for business to break that cycle. And the reason that government can't do it is it's incapacitated by the sort of pulling apart at the seams and the paralysis that results. And you see it in the reaction to the pandemic and confusing messaging. And is it 5 days, you know, post-disease that you can go back to work, or 10 days and different pieces of advice? So at the moment, there are a lot of responsibilities being put on business that historically have been government. So climate change, race, reskilling, wage levels, all of those business has to be face forward and lead on. Beyond that, though, I think stay away from politics. Policy good, politics bad.
Well, those are four huge challenges. So that'd be more than enough to have on any CEO's plate. The numbers were really striking, where by a 5-1 margin, the respondents were saying that they wanted businesses to play a bigger role in all of those issues. And other research I've read sort of indicates that CEOs are really feeling the pressure more from this wider stakeholder group than even their own shareholders these days. Do they tell you that they're up to the task, or are they just feeling this pressure more and more and getting backed into a corner over these issues?
Well, I think CEOs recognize the moment that actually there's very high trust in my employer and my CEO, and the expectation of that CEO to speak up to the employees on the basis that employees want to see their values in what the CEO is advocating. And similarly, consumers are belief-driven buyers, and they exercise brand democracy, and they'll buy or not buy based on what brands stand for. And also fascinating to me is that ESG is now an equal factor in whether a share is purchased by an institution compared to financial performance and operational excellence. So again, it's all three of those stakeholder groups pushing CEOs. And again, our study says 80% want CEOs to stand up and speak up on issues related to policy.
Now, there are 28 countries covered in the trust barometer. So obviously, they're not all democracies. So I wanted to sort of dig into the government numbers a little bit. And the really key one for me was when it comes to basic competence, that government is 55 points less trusted than businesses, 50 points less trusted than the nonprofits. Does that also apply in non-democracies, or is this sort of just across the board that the governments are missing out?
Well, in fact, single-party states, China, Saudi, UAE, are performing very well. It's interesting to me that the disparities between institutions in the autocratic markets are very small. The delta between a business and a government in a China is 5-6 points. Contrast that to a developing market like Mexico or South Africa, it's 40 points difference between business at 70 and government at 30. So the necessity of business in those markets is much higher than in autocracies where government has the mandate and the belief that it'll get things done. The competence word, the C word, is the thing. You know, can it happen? Will they do it?
And I guess that brings us to the question of leadership. And I wonder sort of your perspective on how much of this declining trust is due to leadership failures, a sense of broken promises, and how much of it do you perceive is a symptom of what I would call sort of digitized globalization, where everything is complex, everything's open to scrutiny. And if you're a democratic leader, you don't really have the level of control that you maybe did over your society in the past. And there's nowhere to hide when something goes wrong these days.
When 2/3 of our respondents say that their leaders are liars, we have a problem. And it's journalists, it's political leaders, and it's CEOs. And that's absolutely a different place and time. And it leads to this notion of distrust, where 60% of people say, I go into a situation distrusting the information I'm going to get. And it causes me to say that trust is local. Trust is in my CEO or my mayor, or amazing, Ryan, my employer newsletter is more trusted than the government or the mainstream media. Shocking. And mainstream media in particular in Japan and Korea is trusted by 25% of people. That's a dysfunction, because you have the primary source of data being, you know, traditionally media, being disabled. So in fact, your point is it's a leadership vacuum, but it's also a system-wide problem. It's the both. While we're confronting these massive fears of job loss and climate.
Got it. The other sector that really jumped out at me, and I've felt it before because it's a pattern of these barometers, where technology is a highly trusted sector compared to other sectors. And I was wondering if you can walk us through that.
So I want to distinguish between tech and social media, because social media is at all-time low levels. I mean, for instance, in Western Europe, it's at 20% trust level in Germany and France, while tech is at 70%. So there is a obvious sort of centrifugal on that score. Tech's had a very, very good pandemic. It's enabled us to work remote. It's enabled us to shop and do all the stuff that otherwise we couldn't. And so people also have seen that healthcare and pharma has had a very good pandemic and rewarded that sector with a lot of trust because of innovation and saving lives. So in fact, tech still has hurdles to get through. Privacy is one. Nationalism is another. These are coming. This is not quiescent for a long period of time. We've had other priorities. We'll get back to tech as a concern. But the wealth gap is also a looming issue for tech. And there will be more attacks on the founders and all of this on the basis of whether they pay tax properly or other things.
Or when, as automation ramps up, then you start to see the crunch, where if we have middle-class jobs and sectors that had a lot of middle-class jobs in them being squeezed by the further spread of the big technology companies, I think.
Well, that's why I think reskilling is of absolutely paramount importance for all businesses, because I've heard from CPG companies that they could reduce the number of workers in factories by 50%, you know, turning out the beer or whatever else. And that's just going to dump a lot of people into the market who are very angry. They're already angry about downward mobility on wages, but when jobs are obsoleted without option. So it must be the priority to do as the Germans do, which is to, you know, make vocational education a core part of it and make it a mid-career kind of updating.
Duly noted. Thinking about some of the strategic context here in terms of like geopolitics, I mean, the two relationships that seem to worry people the most in the world today are Russia and its neighbors and the US and China. And you've got results that show Chinese people trusting their institutions at a level of 83% overall versus 43% overall in the US. And it's also true that if you're standing outside of China, there's very low levels of trust in Chinese companies and other institutions. And I was wondering whether you have a view from a competitive standpoint about where that leaves each country. How are these trust levels going to affect the trajectories of China and the US?
I think both sides should look at what the other one does well and do more of it. So for the Chinese, they have to pay attention to issues of governance, of privacy and security. If you're TikTok, for example, you're hamstrung because you have all these questions about where does the data go? And the Americans need to look at how long-term the Chinese are. I actually went hiking in Leaping Tiger Gorge about 3 years ago, and I wound up in this tiny little town when I got to the end of the 28 turns, and it was a little place with growing pigs. And I figured, okay, well, this is going to be a night with no internet, fine. And of course, there was connectivity, Ryan. It was crazy with wires strung over the mountains because the government had promised everybody's going to have access to the internet. Well, you know, hopefully the U.S. can do some of that with this infrastructure bill.
I have driven through so many cell phone black spots in this country. I still find it mind-boggling after all this time. I know we didn't talk a lot about COVID, but maybe if we finish on a COVID note, it seems very clear that governments need to do more to get this pandemic under control on a global basis. Is that the message that you're getting from the populations you surveyed? And what do you think a leader could do about that this year?
COVID and solving the problem is the biggest potential upside for government. It is the litmus test of competence. So whether it's more rapid tests or whether it's consistency on communication or whether it's one way and another, making sure that the health disparities that have become evident are cured by having more doctors in poor neighborhoods or whatever. These are the ways in which government is being evaluated. And So it's my expectation that government is at the bottom here. And as we come out of it, government will get some part of the credit. But in the event, government also has to look at somehow getting away from this addiction to partisan language and to having to hit the other side harder each time. The idea of just get things done is really going to have to be the mandate. That's how you're going to get more votes than the short-term punches that you get on the other team.
We couldn't end on a clearer note. Richard Edelman, thank you for being a Global Insider.
Thanks, Ryan.
Weidong Lin produces this show. Our executive producer of audio is Jenny Arment. I'm Ryan Heath. Subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Global Insider.